For a moment, I'm going to take you back about 3,000 years. The first reading from Amos was written by a man who lived approximately 800 years before Jesus was born. Now, a little bit about Amos. He's obviously a prophet, as we read from the book of the prophet Amos. But before that, he basically made his living as a laborer. He tells us elsewhere in the book that he was basically a simple tenderer of sycamore trees. Now, that doesn't seem all that cutting edge, but just to kind of put it in perspective, the one who tended fig trees had a much more opulent crop. It brought a better price, was not as difficult to tend, involved some work. But for the man who, like Amos, tended sycamore trees, it was a lot of work with not a lot brought to fruition. As a matter of fact, the fruit of the sycamore tree, when it would grow, would have a rather hard shell around it. So in order to make it edible, to allow it to ripen, each individual piece of fruit would have to have a hole penetrated on it to allow it to ripen. And even then, the fruit of the sycamore tree brought very little in the market compared to the fig. So it was a lot of work for not a lot that came back. So what do we know about Amos? He worked hard. As a prophet, I say he could have been mistaken for a Baltimorean. He spoke his mind, he had little filter, and he was certainly anything but politically correct. And that's where we see him speaking today. And who's his audience? Speaking for God. He speaks to those who are basically the wealthy, the powerful. His first words: "Hear this, you who trample upon the needy and destroy the poor of the land." So he's not just speaking to the wealthy. He's speaking to the wealthy who forgets those who help them acquire their wealth. As a matter of fact, he identifies them as being the ones who would do anything to cut corners in order to maximize their profit, to make a buck. Can you hear him almost mocking them? "When will the new moon be over, you ask, that we may sell our grain? When will the Sabbath be over, that we may display the wheat? We'll diminish the ephah, add to the shekel, and fix our scales for cheating." Just like the proverbial butcher who'd stick his thumb on the scale to just take it up a little bit. In other words, he tells them, "You're a bunch of liars and cheaters, and you're looking out only for yourselves." Like I said, he could have been a Baltimorean. But let's make no mistake. Amos's gripe isn't with possessing wealth or wielding power. His gripe is with those who forget that with their wealth, with their power, they forget those who help them to obtain it. The worker. All the stuff that they'd have to put out there, the wheat, the grain, all of the other things, came due to the labor of others who were working for them. And obviously, Amos is telling them that the workers are not getting their fair share. They're being overlooked, taken advantage of, that they are being trampled upon. You know, one of the cornerstones of Catholic Church's teaching is that there is dignity in all human labor. But also, one of the cornerstones is that every laborer deserves a living wage. Every laborer deserves a living wage. Obviously, that changes with time and circumstance as to what it takes to make those ends meet. And our standards today are different than they certainly would have been 50 or 100 or more years ago. But as great as our country and our culture is, we have to stare right in the face the fact that much of what we have was built on the backs of people who worked for little or even nothing. We had an economy at one time that was built on men and women who were sold into slavery, endured maltreatment. We have to acknowledge that even after emancipation, there were many, and still are many, who worked for little in terms of pay, despite putting in long hours of work. At the height of the Industrial Revolution, we had children as young as 7 years old working 12 or 14 hours a day in factories, again, being paid a mere pittance, while those with the wealth, those with the power, continued to amass that wealth. Now, true enough, in the 21st century, that's not where we are today. We certainly are not there. We have advanced in many ways. But we have to be careful that while we might pat ourselves on the back, we have to remember that just because we aren't where we were doesn't mean that we are where we need to be in terms of following the law of our God of justice. You know, Amos in his day, and things have not changed, and it's true in almost every culture that there are people who will amass and amass and amass things. And it's not that he's saying that having wealth is a bad thing. It's what we do with it. It's how we gain it. And it's how we make a difference for good in our world because of it. You see, one general premise I think we all need to hold on to is that everything we have is gift. It's through the very providence of God. You and I each have the gift of life. You and I each have the gift of time that we have here on this earth. We all have various gifts that are our talents, our abilities, that enable us not just to earn a living, but also to make a positive impact in the lives of those around us. We live in a world still where poverty is not foreign, where people live and work and try to make ends meet and sometimes find that it is easier to not work to make ends meet. And there's a problem with that as well, obviously. Well, my friends, when we see the dignity of human work, the dignity of human labor, what it means is we look and say, what is it that I've gotten? How have I gotten it? And what am I doing to give back and to honor those who helped me along the way? The laborer, the farmer, those who sweat and toil. But at the same time, we can never, ever leave anyone behind. You know, it's very easy for us to give in to the temptation to fall to rash judgment towards those who really may be struggling. It's very quick to be able to rationalize in our mind that, well, if they just get a job, they wouldn't be in that situation. Or if they were more responsible with their money, they'd be able to pay their utility bills. You know well that in the economy we have today, more and more people are finding it more and more difficult to meet the basic expenses of food, of clothing, of shelter, and of medicine. And sometimes people are forced with making choices as to which one they will do and which one they have to put off. What's this telling us today? Well, I think on one hand, there's a challenge for us to count our blessings, to do a little personal inventory. What do I have beyond what I need? And again, it's not saying that we can't have creature comforts. But is there something I have or something I have extra of that if I let it go could make someone be in a better place to where they might then actually have it as something they need and it could better their life? Every so often, I go through my closet, and if there's something that I have not worn for a period of time, I figure it's much better on someone else's back than on mine, because it's just going to hang on that hanger. Now, sometimes it might be because I'm in denial and say, I'll fit into that again someday. But you know what? When that day comes, I can deal with it. But what's happening with it right now is it hangs on the rack. So those are the types of things. You know, Mother Teresa was a very holy woman, a wonderful saint. She planted herself in the slums of Calcutta. She told the story about how one day they were really, really tight on rations that they would give to the poor, typically bags of rice, but these bags were getting smaller and smaller and smaller. One day, she delivers one of these very small bags of rice to this woman who had several children, she herself alone, a widow. And she delivers the small bag of rice and she says, I really wish we had more, but that's all I can do right now. The woman, without batting an eyebrow, begins taking the rice and dividing it in half. Mother Teresa says to her, what are you doing? She says, my neighbor next door, she also has children. She's also alone. They need food too. This is for her. She gave it back to Mother Teresa to deliver to the house next door. You know, my friends, it's really easy for us to look at people who are down on their luck or who find themselves in a bad way and say, you know, they made their bed, they can lie in it. How many times have we heard that said? There's one person who never said that. Jesus Christ. As a matter of fact, page through the scriptures from Genesis through Revelation, you'll never find that expression. What we will find, however, is feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, care for the sick, visit the imprisoned, console the sorrowful, show mercy. When we count our blessings, when we look at our lives and take an inventory of what we have, first, let's give thanks to God, because it's through the Lord's benevolence that we are even here today. But then, in taking it to prayer, perhaps it's not a bad thing to ask the question, Lord, thank you for all that I have. Show me what I can do without, so that someone else can simply have something. Our excess could very easily meet someone else's need. So one need not apologize for success in life. One need not be concerned that they have things or enjoy pleasures. But the one thing that God can't tolerate, at least in the world of Amos, is the one who hoards them, keeps them, protects them, essentially wastes them, and forgets that indeed they are the gift that they are. Amen.